Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this Monday morning.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing good.
Yeah.
Good, okay. Hey, and we're going to talk about some of our usual subjects, but we will also give us an opinion about where we think the world's going.
Yes. Always.
What we're seeking is truth. It's not easy. There's a lot of liars out there.
Yeah.
I think that's epidemic. I think politicians always had the tendency to embellish and do all these things. How many people who ran for office had their resumes embellished, which I never understood.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a natural thing. And I think one of the problems we've always had in this regard is that people who are willing to distort the truth are more likely to run for office, and they're more likely to get in a position of power, and they're more likely to get into the bureaucracy too. And I think that's certainly what we witnessed here the last 2 years. It looked like there's nothing more than people who want to deceive everybody else. But we'll do our very best to sort some of these things out. But we talked last week about the summit.
The summit, yeah.
And I think most likely we had a couple criticisms. We were too soft on Russia and this sort of thing. But anyway, we didn't come down hard and say, what a disaster, tomorrow we're going to be dropping bombs. But, and it came out, and we made the point that Putin had a reasonable statement.
Yeah.
And I, quite frankly, personally, I didn't understand what Biden was trying to say all the time. But anyway, what we have now, though, is an example of don't even listen to what they say. Listen to what they do. Watch what they do. And this is what we did. It was sort of agreeable, the whole thing, for both sides, that there was no bickering, fighting, and yelling and screaming. But all of a sudden, United States, our president, decided, well, we have to put on more sanctions. We haven't done enough. We have to show them who's boss. And, of course, philosophically, I think, punitive tariffs and sanctions have no value. And one of the reasons is first, it's not fair. It should be unconstitutional. But the other thing is, it tends to hurt us more than it hurts them. If you put on tariffs and sanctions backfire, they start doing it to us. So it doesn't seem like it was the proper follow-up. And I doubt if you're shocked at it, but for me, I'm a little bit disappointed that it didn't take long to put sanctions on after them pretending, oh, we're big buddies, we get along good, and we compliment each other.
Maybe I'm gullible, Dr. Paul, but I am a little shocked about it, because here we have a meeting, and we were pretty positive about the meeting. We're not positive about Biden, but we thought he did a reasonably good job. Didn't do anything crazy, and it seems like, low expectations. But really, this is U.S. diplomacy in a nutshell. Here they go, and they have what is referred to by both parties as positive and constructive talks. They sat and they talked for 2 hours. They talked about certain things. They had some minor achievements, the return of ambassadors, more talks on different things. So it all seems like it's going according to plan. And then out comes Jake Sullivan, President Biden's national security advisor. He has a long history as part of the deep state in foreign policy. He and people like Victoria Nuland and Antony Blinken, they've all been behind the scenes manipulating when Obama was president. Well, now they have their moment in the sun, and they're not about to let it go. And so literally less than a week after a positive talks with Putin, Sullivan comes out and says, quote, we're preparing another package of sanctions to apply to this case, i.e. the Navalny case, as well. We've shown all along that we're not going to pull punches. Now imagine this. You have Russia, which obviously the economy is not as big as the U.S., Dr. Paul, but they are, by many defense analysts, ahead of us in terms of technological developments in the defense and military field. But whatever the case, a serious nuclear armed power, a serious contender, particularly in the Eurasian theater, and here you have this little Jake Sullivan, this little national security advisor, bragging about punching Russia in the face. You know, think about what that phrase means. We're not going to pull punches. That means when we punch you, it's going to make contact. Matt, think about that. That if that is not U.S. diplomacy in a nutshell, I don't know what is.
You know, this is based on an assumption that everybody has an opinion and everybody is absolutely correct about Navalny. That, you know, he's the source of the problem, and he's the good guy and Putin is the bad guy. And for me, I really don't know.
Yeah.
because it hasn't been my business, and I've heard both sides of this. I've heard Putin's side, I've heard his side, and other people have other opinions. And I think we should have the opinion, but it shouldn't depend on it. You know, our policy, if the issue should be tariffs and sanctions. Should we be doing this? Is this following through with a decent conversation between the two leaders? Or should we go back to something else that's really very controversial? There's a lot of disagreement here, because especially, you know, if people want to use Navalny to make Putin look worse, they've essentially accomplished that, you know. Putin is the bad guy forever, and he's probably not the good guy forever either. But right at this moment, do we have to stir it? That's why we were more satisfied last week than we are today.
Well, first of all, the so-called poisoning of Navalny, who, let's not forget, is a minor Russian political figure. Outside of liberal circles in Moscow and St. Petersburg, he's virtually unknown. He's not the second in the opposition. He's not the second in the polls. In fact, the second in the polls in Russia has always been the Communist Party. So in terms of political power, he's a zero. He's a nobody. He was supposedly poisoned last year, Dr. Paul, with Novichok, the most deadly substance in the history of the entire universe. Although it doesn't do very well, because not only did it not kill Navalny, it left him to survive to become a symbol of Putin's, quote, evil, but it also didn't kill the Skripals. And nobody talks about them anymore. What happened to the Skripals? They've disappeared. They're somehow in British custody. We don't see them, however. What's happened to them? So here you have Navalny. Last year, nobody was really talking about him. He's all but ignored internationally. Then all of a sudden, when very convenient politically, it explodes that, oh my gosh, Putin put some Novichok in his tea, and didn't quite kill him, left him around for the U.S. to impose sanctions, which it did. And we've never seen any proof. Maybe he did it. I don't know. If he did, he's certainly not the evil mastermind that he's viewed at in neocon circles. He's an absolute bungler if he can't even kill people with the worst poison in the world. But the fact is, we've never seen definitive proof. Why doesn't the U.S. give us proof if he was indeed poisoned?
You know, a lot of times an administration will have a person state a position, and it really doesn't make the deep state, the real bosses, that happy. So they have to go get somebody out there and revise it and backtrack and do this. Something like this, I wonder a little bit. I mean, is this all their strategy? Look like a good guy today, and then next day we have to do it and try to satisfy both sides? Or did they find that Biden overstepped his bounds? He's only the president. He doesn't have a right to say something half decent, but he will do what we tell him, and he will go along with the punishment against Putin, and therefore they'll put on these sanctions. So that's why it's such a delight to have a philosophy that doesn't demand that we dissect and understand every single problem in every single country of the world, especially when we're in 130 of them, probably making their problems worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if we want to deal with problems in foreign countries, we ought to first look to ourselves. Are we involved? Do we give money to one faction? Do we send weapons to somebody? Do we urge people to support certain candidates? Do we get involved in their election? There's a lot of cleaning up we could do without deciding, you know, the intricacies of this little skirmish in Russia.
Well, we do know that the U.S. government does fund Navalny and his organization. So, and this is what Putin said, well, that makes him a foreign agent. Just as if Russia was funding someone here, some NGO, of course it would be listed in big letters. So that's the case. But and you touched on this, Dr. Paul, but if we're worried about the politicization of justice, I know a guy sitting in Belmarsh prison right now for the crime of journalism. So if we want to talk about how politics is, justice is being abused in the name of politics, as you say, how about looking at the log in our own eye instead of the potential splinter in the other eye? And I would say, you know, what Russia should do, they've shown that they're not in a mood to be kicked in the face anymore, or to have punches in the face, as Sullivan might say. They should just say, hey, if you do that, we're not sending our ambassador back.
Right.
You want to play? Let's play, you know.
I'm thinking of shifting to our next item.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. There was a problem on January 6th, and a few people were arrested, but they were very, very bad people.
Evil.
They were going to commit an insurrection, and they committed crimes worse than the Civil War.
That's right. That's what Biden said.
Without a gun.
Yeah.
Without a gun. And with supporters and tourists urged to walk in there and visit the Capitol at a particular time. Anyway, we've gone over that a few times, but the individuals being charged are political prisoners.
Yeah.
They haven't had due process. They haven't talked to a judge. Nobody has charged them with any crime, and they are locked up. But people might stop and think it's easy to forget. But last summer there were problems in the street,
yeah.
Riots, burning a building, a lot of thefts going on, and a lot of people were arrested for this, rightfully so. But that was a mistake because the police overreacted,
yeah.
And so we have to close you down. We're not even allowed you to exist. We're taking away everything and defund the police so you can all quit. So that went on, but then. What about the people that they arrested? Because even though it was a small number, because when you saw the films, at least the films got out to show the American people there's something really terrible going on. I don't think they showed any violence similar to that, you know, in the Capitol.
Yeah, there very little. Any, some, but not as much. Yeah.
So what about those cases? Maybe they're really cracking down. They're harsh. They're harsh with those insurrection people, you know, from the Capitol. So guess what? Here, statement from New York. Most riot looting cases from last year's dropped by New York City district attorneys. They dropped all the charges.
Yeah.
And you would think that if you just looked at this from not a philosophical viewpoint, just at this in a practical way, this should have a political message to it. But it may have been a political message last year because, you know, the conservatives and the Republicans did pretty well in the election. It was just one election that seemed to be a little bit mixed up, you
yeah.
know, that didn't go along with the evidence because people were getting tired of that. And now we're seeing some people on the left and we're seeing some liberal members of Congress. I'll bet there's a bunch that are squirmish about what's coming and what the next election will bring. But this stuff is just crazy, you know, that they do this and they do it and they call it justice.
Yeah.
That's justice. It's the social justice warriors. That's what they are. We'll decide who are the bad guys and who are the good guys, and we will punish them our way, and we will reward them other ways. So as long as you're doing the duty of the social Marxists, you get rewarded by you getting to do anything you want, and violence is no hindrance.
Well, as our friend Gerald Celente would say, justice means just us,
yeah,
the government.
Right.
But caught on tape, we saw there's plenty of tapes of people doing this, and actually let's put up that first clip. Caught on tape, faces identified in the store, stealing stuff, and out of just in the Bronx, 118 arrests in the Bronx, out of 118, 73 of those cases were just dismissed. 19 of the convictions were on minor charges like trespassing. We saw what it looked like. We saw what was happening, but contrast that again to January 6th, where these people, 500 people have been arrested, many of them held without bail, for nonviolent crimes with no prior criminal records. Compare the two. You can't help but concluding, Dr. Paul, that U.S. is kind of like a banana republic, where certain crimes are more equal than other crimes, you know, and the George Floyd protests were officially approved by the elites, and so therefore, no matter what people did, no matter how much they stole and burned, the poor businessman, of course, most of those businesses were minority-owned businesses, burned to the ground, it doesn't matter. So let's look at this next one, and this is an example. It's become something that is so absurd that it's a laughable thing. But this is how the mainstream media covered this. Remember this, Dr. Paul? fiery but mostly peaceful protests. This is from last summer, the CNN correspondent. How buffoonish this whole thing is. The whole city's in flames, mostly peaceful protests. So it is disgusting. Americans should be alarmed at how justice is becoming just us.
You know, I think the way you said it, it's correct. You said something that some crimes are more equal than others.
Yeah.
How about there's some people who are more equal than others, you know, and they get treated differently. But that's notorious, and that's the problem. And it leads to civil strife. And I always go back to when I'm a little bit confounded. Why do they do this? This is so bad. This is going to backfire on them. They want chaos. That's what cultural Marxism is all about. Chaos in the streets. They believe you have to destroy all of Western civilization. They write this, and they've done it for years.
Yeah.
This is the theory of communism. You can't just gradually replace it. We believe that you can, at least you should participate in trying to improve society as gradually or as aggressively you can to turn it into a free society.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, let's say we live in a society which is interventionist. It's not quite socialist, but it's interventionist. We don't say, well, we have to get rid of everybody who believes that government should intervene or anybody who used Federal Reserve notes or something like that. What we say is we try to improve society by education and changing people's mind. But the opposition, the enemies who are doing this, their goal is social destruction. And that was true from the beginning of communism, and it's just raised its ugly head once again in this country.
Yeah, and there we go. There we have it. Well, let's move on to a little bit of COVID stuff because, you know, finally we're able to see in the mainstream media a debate that should have happened a year ago or more, which is a debate on some of the, it used to be third rail aspects. Should everyone take the shot? Is the shot right for everyone? Were the lockdowns a good idea? How about masks? We talked about masks, I think, on Thursday. Remember where those parents sent in the masks of their children to have them analyzed and found all sorts of horrible pathogens on them. But now we're looking at some, and this is from the LA Times, Dr. Paul. LA Times, not conspiracy times, but they're talking about some vaccine experts are having second thoughts about rushing to inoculate kids. And of course, the story doesn't say, hey, don't give your kids a shot. But it's saying that there is at least a debate now. And this is the problem when you politicize, as you've always said, politicize medicine, because you suppress debates that may actually end up saving lives. And here we are now with people saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't rush into shooting every kid.
One person was trying to explain this. He says, people now have been converted. We've converted now from being pro-vaccine to vaccine fanaticism.
Yeah,
you know, they've gone nuts over it, and this aggressiveness with the children. Of course, we complain all along, you know, about the kids wearing these masks, and of course, we've talked about, you know, how dangerous the masks are, and the masks contain a lot of bacteria and infectious agencies, and yet I think this is child abuse at its worst to do this, and medical experimentation. I don't think there's ever been, a new drug that has not been properly tested gets so much attention and gives so many shots. They brag about how many millions of people we've given this to.
Yeah.
And the thousands that now have complained and reported to the CDC, and you can find it, and people have died from it. You don't hear about that because statistically it is not of importance unless it's your own child. You know, then statistically it's pretty serious. But it's a real mess, and it's an attitude, and that, this is associated with the bigger thing that we've talked about a lot, and that's the vaccine passport.
Yeah.
Just how that'll play out. Fortunately, us and others who would join us say that we better be aware of this passport thing. But they have something every bit as sinister. They have the businessman being the lackey, and he's the one that has to go in. They're more strict than the government is right now,
yeah.
because the government holds their power. They're dependent on the government, you know, and they say, well, you have to do it. You'll lose your license. You'll lose your contract. You can't borrow money, and all kinds of threats. So they go along with it, and the pressure is there. It's not exactly a free society from my viewpoint.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the article we're talking about, the LA Times article, you know, of course, it has the usual things that you'd expect in it. But in talking about the scientists who are starting to wonder whether you need to shoot all kids with this stuff, and here's a quote from it. Their doubts are not born of conspiracy beliefs, but couched in the carefully calibrated language of risk and benefit. And that's, unfortunately, that's how it should have been at the very beginning. How susceptible are children to this virus? And is it worth it for them to take this shot? We know statistically, this is not out on a ledge, statistically it's virtually impossible for a healthy child, a healthy young person, to become very sick from this virus. So when you look at, and the article talks about this problem of the heart inflammation, only the reported ones thus far are 226 cases of the heart inflammation in young people, and you should not have that number. So they're saying, is the risk of the virus worth potentially using these mRNA vaccines or shots and the possible side effects? Now, the fact that we're having the debate now after millions have been shot is a big problem. And if these vaccine makers didn't have the immunity that they have, they might start lawyering up, I think.
You know, I just mentioned how they can intimidate business people to enforce, but they can intimidate parents too. Parents who are eager, you know, to do what they've been told is best for their kids.
Yeah.
They're waking up. There's fewer now all the time because they are waking up and changing their mind. But the authorities have this tool of ridicule. If you don't do this, or you protect your child and say, no, I'm not going to give it to my child, they don't say, well, that is good. You've thought this through and you make some good points. They say, you are the enemy of the society.
Anti-vaxxer.
what are they called now? They're called terrorists.
Yeah,
domestic terrorists. Yeah. If you happen to be a physician that says, you know, I don't give it to my kids, I don't believe in it, and I can show you scientific evidence that challenges this, it should be discussed more, and you should have a freedom of choice on taking this. Nobody should be intimidated. But then to say that the people who resist, or the parents, or a doctor that teaches it, they use the word terrorists.
Yeah. You know,
that's a vicious way to find justice.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well, we're going to move on to where there is a lot of terror right now, and it's not done by doctors or terrorists in the classic sense of the word. It's in Chicago. And Mayor Lightfoot, we've talked about her all along. From the very beginning, she's been one of the top hypocrites. She's up there with Gavin Newsom and Cuomo, I think. But she had a realization recently. She said that actually racism in Chicago is such a public health crisis that she's going to go ahead and take some of that COVID money and use it to set up anti-racism centers.
I don't believe it.
And she said, it's almost, at almost every single point of our city's history, racism has taken a devastating toll on the health and well-being of our residents of color, especially those who are black. Ladies and gentlemen, it's literally killing us. Dr. Paul, I would just have to counter that argument. Here is what's literally killing people in Chicago. Let's put up that next clip, please. It's not racism. Deadliest weekend of the year in Chicago, 12 killed, 42 wounded in shootings. Hit the next one. That's back in May. This is May 2, 54 shootings, 12 deaths mark Chicago's deadliest weekend. And you see this every weekend. But she wants to close her eyes to that because she's completely ineffective at doing that. Instead, she wants to ride this train of racism.
Yeah. But I think she's explained that. That's all white supremacy problem. but too often, or sadly, both the person getting killed and the person doing the killing might be from the same race, that sort of thing. But she did say one thing that caught my attention, because she knows what to use, the cliches to use about racism and why white people are the bad people and this sort of thing. But this is additional. This makes it open-ended. Anything goes with her new rules. He says, the mayor added, when we think about racism, many of us think about its visible and audible forms, you know, speech and that sort of thing. And she says, but in reality, the insidious nature of systemic racism has other impacts that are every bit as deep and harmful, but are often ones we can't see. You can't see them because they probably don't exist, you know, so they have to create this thing. So this, it's pretend, oh yeah, I sense that this is the case, and this is what happens, even though there's no direct evidence. They have the guilty parties all lined up, and they have the arm of the justice system behind them, and that's where the real tragedy has been going on here in these last year or two, and it's gotten so much worse. That's been around for a long time, but it's gotten a lot worse, and all we can do is keep talking about it in the best way possible to get people alerted to the fact of what's really happening, and look for the people. There's a lot of people out there now, more than ever before, who have leveled with the public, have economic understanding, they have scientific understanding, and they have a sense of justice and sense of seeking truth and try to figure out which right. There's never this idea that one person all of a sudden has absolute truth. These new rules, they changed language, they changed all things, cause and effect. Now, I did it, we did it. I often wondered who these people were that can change language, change definition of words just overnight. And then if you don't do it, you get woked. If you don't use the language they want you to use, that's a real free society. Right. And then they get involved in thoughts, and that's why we now have censorship, which is epidemic and very dangerous.
Well, Lori Lightfoot is the same anti-racist warrior who said, I'm not going to answer any questions from white journalists. Imagine if the shoe were on the other foot. If there is racism, maybe I'm too naive, Dr. Paul, but because I don't hear it or see it, maybe it's because of my white privilege. But I think in normal people, decent, civilized people, if they heard someone say a racial slur, they would stop and say, what are you talking about? You can't talk that way. That's disgusting. You know, so anyway.
We don't have it, I don't believe, today, but it reminds me of the ad of the black man that he was at a school board meeting.
Oh, yeah, that
and
was great.
He really went on, and he spoke their language and their tones, everything else. And I thought, well, you know, this guy's pretty good. And I had already stereotyped him. But then in his language, he says, no white man ever stopped me from doing it. I think he inferred that he was in poverty at one time, worked his way up, had two medical degrees. And so he was just trying to even this thing up. You know, I'm sure he'd be quite willing to point out when white people, mess up. But he said that this whole idea that you can't go anywhere because the white people are going to stop you. He had credibility, that's for sure. And I guess a couple million people watched it.
Yeah, it was a big one. And what he said is the critical race theory is dividing people. It's not uniting people, it's dividing. So yeah, that was a great one. We should try to find that clip. And I'm sure our audience, they're so savvy, I'm sure they've seen it. But we should try to find that clip. I'm just going to close, Dr. Paul, in saying that we're, unfortunately, as I mentioned on Thursday, our Houston event is completely sold out. There might be one or two odd tickets that'll be available depending on our invited guests. But we're now working super hard on Washington. I'm really excited. I'm a little bit, I don't know what the word is, but we always like to put together conferences that I would like to see, people I want to see talk. And so in a way, it's I guess I'm being selfish, but the people that we're talking to, the people that we've already signed up, I'm really excited about the war on us. And this is about COVID, it's about domestic terrorism, it's about us in the crosshairs. And I'm really excited about it. I hope in the next couple of days, we're going to have tickets on sale. And guess what, Dr. Paul, I have also mentioned we're going to do another Ron Paul Scholars Seminar the day before. We're going to get those applications out. We're going to have young people coming out. And learning from some great people, some people that we both know and like, and we'll announce them later. But it's shaping up to be a pretty good Ron Paul Institute summer.
Very good. And we have two things coming up. So periodically, Daniel, I suggest making sure they know which is here and what it has, which one is filled up. And also, you know, we're going to be attending, I'm pretty sure in the fall, we'll be attending a conference,
another
which is always
down,
important, when, and now is with the Mises Institute.
That's right, that's
so,
right. Lots
well,
happening.
This is good. I mean, the people are starved for it. I admire the people that even in the lockdown, they always held their conferences, and which I liked and would do. It's just that I don't fly those airplanes with the Gestapo's on there, and they want to see my passport. But anyway, we're better off, I think, at this time this year than we were a year ago. So that's improvement, and we should look at that. And we don't have to work on tearing down society. We have to keep working on building up society with the understanding of what freedom is all about. And one word that I use a lot, and a lot of people in the freedom movement like to use it, is voluntarism. You know, that sounds pretty good. Coercion versus voluntarism, force versus nonviolence. I mean, how can anybody turn it down? But people philosophically can't stand it, and they turn it down just outright. Believing that they are the only ones that know what utopia is like, and they're going to tell us exactly what it is. But I think that people are waking up, and we're going to continue to do what we're doing, getting a message out. And we have had a busy year trying to get information out and try to get the proper perspective on lockdown. But now it's the residual of lockdown that we have to deal with, because some of this stuff isn't going to go away. And guess what? The scoundrels that have done this to us are looking for the next virus. And that is what we have to be aware of. And that's why always, you know, try to challenge this on principle. The government shouldn't be in doing this. So if it's wrong to force people to take vaccinations, it should be wrong anytime. And voluntarism and nonviolence is something that should stick with us if you want to live in a free society. Most people I know really would want to. Most people that don't even realize if you sort it out for them and say, would you like to do what you want with your own life? Most people, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good idea. But there's one rule that some people don't like, and that is you can't hurt other people, and you can't take their property. And that's the big thing. But one other part of this philosophy that people reject outright too is they think that if you allow other people to do what they want with their life, and they don't hurt anybody, you give them credit, they do things, their habits, their religion, or whatnot, is something you disagree with, that you have to disagree with it. Because you allow them to do it, and you permit them to do it, you're not allowed to use force to stop them from doing it. That is a temptation that over the centuries, and certainly in this country, we still have a lot of people, yes, what they're doing is going to hurt themselves, and we don't want them to. Our job in government is to make you safe. Once government starts off on this subject of making everybody safe, like in this all this medical stuff going on, safe from the virus, it cannot be done without the sacrifice of liberty. And I have argued the case for years. To live in a free society and to have safety and security, you do not have to sacrifice liberty. And most people now think, oh, on certain occasions you have to. 9/11, it was very necessary. We sacrificed liberty because it was so dangerous. Oh, yes, there's a bad virus out there. We have to sacrifice our liberty. No, you don't. You never have to sacrifice liberty. It won't be a perfect society, but it'll be a lot better than one where the dependency is on the government to make us safe and secure. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.